Hello, everyone. This is Adam Meister, the Bitcoin Meister, the Disrupt Meister. Welcome to This Week in Bitcoin. Today is October the 12th of 2023. Strong hand, long-term thinking. Bitcoin always returns to its all-time high. This is where the big boys play. Best guest in the space. Oh, yeah. I'm bringing you this panel. Is it the third time in a row? It's becoming a regular thing here. We're doing it monthly, maybe the two times a month. Who knows what's next? Hello, my elite friends. Golden age of the 2020s is here. You've seen this Bitcoin shirt before. Yeah, it is a Bitcoin shirt, but you know, there's some other news that's going on that has to do with, you never know what's going on. But yeah, it is a Bitcoin shirt. I got this FOMO 21. You can get like one of these also for your favorite country, or I'm not saying it's my favorite country, but it's a good darn country. Anyway, remember, link to below, unconfiscatable tickets. That's in December, Meister 10. Discount code, and very thanks to all the dudes who send super chats. You can ask questions. Big Sean Harris, Marco Esquandola, Sightseeing TV, Alpha Network, Henry Law, and Craig Ship. We only need $61 more. If you want me to do a one Bitcoin show, I was on Thomas Hunt's show on Friday. That's linked to below, and that's the World Crypto Network. And also, if you do want my a take on the Israel situation, that is linked to below. I did that on my backup channel because I thought, oh, I don't want to do it on my main channel. I'll get thrown off of YouTube. Well, lo and behold, everybody's talking about it. So I could have done it on my main channel. Anyway, so Vance, I got to start with you today, man. I got to start with you because in between the last show and this show, you wrote a piece in the Wall Street freaking Journal with the Grover Norquist. So congratulations.
Hey, thanks. Thank you.
And you should be really proud of that, man. And I'm really proud to have you on the show. I don't know how many other Bitcoiners have Wall Street Journal writers on their show, and dudes that know like Grover Norquist and stuff. That we're gonna talk about that later. What you exactly wrote about, and who Grover Norquist is. But first, a question that I didn't prepare anybody for. Really, I mean, this week or since we last talked, has there been any like Bitcoin mainstream news, crypto news that you know about, anything that just jumped into your head or anything like that? Or have you not heard anything? I just wondered, you know, is there a big news top? But I had a hard time finding topics today. Anything jump into your head?
Are you talking to all of us?
No. Just fans. Just fans. Oh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going on since we last talked. And recently, of course, with the Hamas and Israel situation.
No, we're really good, but anything to do with Bitcoin.
I was getting to that because that puts uncertainty in the economy, and people want to jump to things like Bitcoin, gold, other things that are out there. Bitcoin in particular here, I think, could be a good way to have a competitive currency whenever you have so much uncertainty that's out there in the economy. And when you look at inflationary pressures that are out today, that's another good measure because the Federal Reserve is continuing to kill the dollar, and all the excess spending that's going on by Congress as well. You know, just over the last, 3 days, we've seen over $200 billion added to the federal deficit. So this is unsustainable, and it's one reason why we need more news. I haven't seen a whole lot, to be honest with you, but we need more news about Bitcoin and things of that nature, because this is where we're heading. This is what we need to go moving forward.
So, yeah, I agree that the macro scene is really it's been dominating everything. There hasn't been too many Bitcoin news, but there's been something seeping up there here and there. So I'm going to add, and you've got some good talking points there, man. You were like a presidential candidate during a debate. You know what the
boom, boom, hey, don't put that on me. Hey, don't put that on me.
No, you're professionally trained here, man. You know how to. Do you have media training? I mean, you've really seen
this. Yes. If Trump wins,
yeah,
would you have a job waiting for you?
That's a good question. Well, no,
I don't think so. I doubt it because I've been pretty critical of some of the things that's happened with the Trump administration and the shutdowns and stuff like that. So we'll see. But I kind of doubt it.
You left on your own. Mm. I mean,
I did.
And he doesn't, I mean, the loyalty thing, I think you're a very loyal person, but probably if you leave his organization, he considers you completely disloyal and doesn't want anything to do with you again. I mean,
yeah. But the other thing is like I'm willing to serve my country. Like even going up there in the first place, I wanted to serve the country, try to put things in a better direction than when things were going. Talk about spending restraint and you know the value of the dollar or how they're crushing the dollar, international trade. Like these are the things, these are the types of debates that I had while I was in there. And so that was a great experience. I mean, a big reason why I left, a couple of reasons, but one reason was because of all the shutdowns. I wanted to get to Texas where I thought there was going to be more freedom, which ended up being the case. And then also, you know, there's some policy differences that at the end of the day, I was like, look, it's going to be better for me to be on the outside and talk about what's going on. But you do need good people that's in there. I mean, you can't just run everybody off in the process because that's really what we need, you know, up there in D.C.
This is a principled man. Pound that like button. He's willing to go back today. Unbelievable. Very good man. All right. But let's go to Ulrich real quick because we're on the periphery here of the main topics. Now, Ulrich, you're going to tell us what happened at the Pacific Bitcoin Conference in Santa Monica in Los Angeles. We'll talk about that a little later. But when you were there, was there any big news story anybody was talking about? Anything. It could be anything. Any gossip, anything that's just seeping through to the mainstream that's from the Bitcoin crypto world.
Yeah, you know, the good thing about the conferences is that it sort of gives you a little bit of a hiatus or a Sabbath on focusing on the number go up. And so, make sure you guys mute. I think I'm getting a little feedback. But it's like I hear, you know, when I go to these conferences, I hear a lot of family reunion dynamic. I hear a lot of talking about the cultural aspect of what it means to be in a stateless with a stateless money.
But then let me just again, you're going to talk about. But was there any news story that was specific news story that anybody that was a big story that everybody was talking about? Anything like that?
That's the thing. Like this one more than ever. Like it was almost silent.
Yes. My point is this that. Logical people out there, the Bitcoiners, they're not yentas. They don't care about something. There is a story out there, the FTX story. I see it everywhere in these. This is what the normies associate with Bitcoin with crypto with everything with. Okay, and Thomas, you know, when I was on a show on Friday, he just reads the headlines, and that's what the subject matters are. I don't do that, but it's a logical way to do a show. I don't like talking about SBF at all because I feel that Elizabeth Warren is going to use it as a club against Bitcoin in the future, again, to regulate everything, to shut down exchanges, to do this, that, and the other. So what I was getting at, I just wanted to hear if, you know, anybody had, you know, just, you know, heard, you know, if this was something that people were talking about. I don't think people really care about it because, and this is my question for Andy. Andy, you know people who lost money at Mt. Gox. It's personal to you. You've made that very clear. Do you know anyone who lost money at FTX?
Well, I had one Bitcoin at Mt. Gox. I'm not getting it back.
Yes. That was much smaller back. I just want
to. That was $700 I lost. Yeah. That's all.
But back in the day, Mt. Gox served. It didn't do billions of dollars, supposedly, like FTX supposedly did.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know anyone who had money at FTX. Then again, I don't really talk to me. I'll go on it.
Yeah. But this is the point I am getting at here. Mm-hmm. This FTX thing, and I was just at the Salt Lake City Bitcoin meetup. Were people talking about FTX? No, they were not. No, they were not talking about FTX or, you know, SBF and his TDS. And who he slept with, or no, they don't talk about that. But CoinDesk, all these Cointelegraph, it's like, oh my God. And then, you know, when the normies actually talk about Bitcoin on these political podcasts and stuff, it's SBF. Who did he give money to? Who did he do this to? Who did he do that to? Dudes, I gotta tell you guys, something is whack with this thing because no, I don't know anyone who lost money over there at all. But I mean, the whole thing was a lie. It was just paper Bitcoin. It was lying about volume. beyond, and I think it hurt some wealthy investors, some guys who did trust him. People were not doing due diligence. The people who were not doing due diligence, though, were these venture capitalist people, were Tom Brady. And so this is why it's in the news, I guess. I mean, and since these people were hurt, the people who hate Bitcoin, he was a great marketer of FTX. He was a good networker. It's unfortunate. People can say, Adam, you're bringing it up now. I'm bringing it up so people know not to bring it up. Okay, I just wanted to clear, because it's not going away. It's going to be used as a way to regulate people more. And maybe it was, maybe it was foreigners lost their money. I don't know. You know, there's weird talk about, I'm not even going to get into it.
Adam, I don't think any of this matters at all, to be honest with you.
No, it doesn't. But
no, I'm not worried about, I mean, I don't really care what Elizabeth Warren wants to do or anything.
The price of Bitcoin will be affected.
FTX has been out there for years now. Like, no one cares. Bitcoiners don't care. And the fact that you're at these conferences and no one is talking about anything is because, look, 70% of the Bitcoin is tied up already, and that number just keeps going higher. No one cares about any of this stuff. It doesn't matter what anyone tries to regulate. Like, they want to stop all the mining. They want to shut all the exchanges. Good, shut them all down. To me, the best thing that could possibly happen to Bitcoin would be if they close down Binance. And I think that's going to happen, because I think he is way worse than FTX. And I think it's the fact that the FTX is in the news right now at this trial, showing what a criminal thing is going on. And the Department of Justice is already looking into Binance. Everyone knows this is one of the worst criminal operations I've ever seen in my lifetime. And I believe that when that goes down, that will be the best thing that ever happens for Bitcoin. Bitcoin doesn't need Coinbase. Bitcoin doesn't need Binance. Bitcoin doesn't need FTX. It doesn't care. And now that we have all these fundamental factors, economically, financially, the halving, we're at a record hash rate. We're at a record difficulty, record amount of hodlers. All these things are going to come together very, very quickly. And as Vance will agree with me on, the interest rate surge is about to just destroy the whole world. It's not going to go back down. Rates are going to keep going up until everything is obliterated like a tidal wave.
I want to agree with you on that. Bitcoin doesn't care about all this, but I think people can see the Bitcoin price does care about it. The market panics every time when Binance goes down the tube, and I don't want it to happen because people are going to panic. There will be another exchange to take them place that has just as much fake Bitcoin out there. Okay, it's a never-ending cycle. Who knows? It's going to keep on going and going.
Yeah, but Adam, fake Bitcoin.
I'm not trusting the regulators to get rid of the paper.
Fake Bitcoin is not like fake gold. That's the beauty of it, because of the blockchain. We know that 70% of it hasn't moved for a year, and if anything like that happened on Binance, that number would jump to 75 and then 80, just as we hit the halving. And at some point, people realize, there's just no Bitcoin out there. It doesn't matter what you try to do. You have to get your hands on the real thing. That stair step is going to happen sometime in the next halving cycle, maybe sooner if we have some kind of major event. But I truly believe that 4 years from now, we'll be way into the six digits, and I mean way into them.
Again, getting rid of FTX was good for the system in theory. But what happened when it went down the tube? Bitcoin hit $16,000. It was nonsense. It was insane. So it's going, Bitcoin doesn't care. Bitcoin price does care, especially during the years that are down market years, like would be it 2019, 2018, 2022, 2023 that we're in the middle of right now. People overreact more so during these types of years. And I just want to put it out there that, this is the reason I do talk about Elizabeth Warren and stuff, because if she did shut down Coinbase, if that did happen, if they did move to Dubai, geez, and if it happened this year, the price of Bitcoin, it would be affected, seriously affected. Seriously.
Yeah. Hey, Adam, I mean, yeah, Secretary Yellen has been a disaster. There was a good piece out in Fox News here recently talking about Janet Yellen and the disaster that she's been on so many different levels by Kevin Roberts and EJ Antoni over at Heritage. But I was looking at the Bitcoin value or price today, 26,658. So one day it's down about 1%, 5 days down almost 5%. But if you look over the last month, you know, as we've seen more uncertainty and things that are going on, I just posted in the YouTube chat kind of what's going on here recently with some of the uncertainty. It's up 3.1%. 6 months, it's down a little bit. Well, actually quite a bit, 10%. But year to date, it's up 61%. 1 year, it's up almost 40%. 5 years, up 315%. So we're seeing the way that the value can increase over time as people are looking for some measures of certainty, some measures of safety, which used to be gold, you know, in a lot of ways, but people are thinking about other options now.
Yeah, and that was the question I wanted to ask Andy, the gold. But wait, since I got you talking here, Vance. So did you hear anything about FTX and this SBF guy? Do you hear this stuff? Does this enter your world at all?
You know, a little bit, but not a whole lot. I haven't really heard a whole lot recently.
Good. All right. I want to go to, so Andy, you know, he just brought up gold and certainty, how that used to be the way of certainty, gold. Andy comes from the gold establishment. He broke away from it. But Andy, you told me, and I didn't clarify with, I'm going to clarify it with you right now. That, I mean, you used to work for, what was the name of that?
Miles Franklin,
that their leader was on Rand's show, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now this is a very interesting thing. Why did you part ways with them? Wasn't your parting ways with them because you talked about Bitcoin, correct?
Yeah. Well, no, it was great. First of all, you were the first person that interviewed me in 2016 when I was still there and I was starting to write about Bitcoin. Tone Vase did also. I did one of his shows. And then by the middle of 2017, it got so contentious because I was writing more about Bitcoin than gold, that we had a big falling out, and he fired me for basically talking about Bitcoin. That's when I started CGC.
But the man who fired you now goes on the lowest of the low. Rand is a marketer. Andy can really rip it.
But he was talking about gold. Yeah, no, Rand and Mario and Wolf of Wall Street are the three lowest scum you can find. But Andy was talking about how gold, he was talking about gold, not, it would have been great if he talked about Bitcoin.
But that's the thing. But this is the thing. He has to. This is the state of gold right now. And this is my bigger question. He has to go onto a digital asset show. He has to go on to, in order to save his gold investment, his business. He's got to appeal to digital, the digital world now. And I just wonder, like, it's crazy because he's gone for. It seems like desperation almost because he fired you because of it in 2017 or 2016, whenever it was, a long time ago now. But now the world has progressed. This world is clear. That act by him shows how digital this world is getting, okay? And how gold is archaic. And I'm wondering, what is the point of physical assets anymore? I mean, are they just too much of attack vectors? I mean, this is a broader question. But I really think the example, and not many people are even going to know who Miles Franklin are, blah, 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 blah. But it really shows a changing of the guard here, that he has to go on Rand's show to save his, you know, to help his business. And
let me just finish by saying here that this is a fact. Within a year or two, all the bullion dealers will be out of business. They have zero liquidity. The physical premiums have surged because there's not enough supply. There's not enough trading, and they have not enough demand. All they have is sellers, people inheriting and dumping it. And I don't think that they'll be in business in a year or two, any bullion dealers.
Okay, I want to get Ulrich back in here. After hearing such things, Ulrich, and you're a very young dude and everything. Is this world just becoming totally digital? Is everyone going to abandon physical assets here?
Yeah, you have to remember about the thing about gold, and people always try to tie Bitcoin and gold together. Honestly, I see them as so different, because centralization can happen in many different ways, whether it's the government, whether it's a dealer, whether if you went back to the exchange, guess what? The goldsmith is centralizing it. Okay, so you have to trust whomever is holding your gold. Guess what? Unless you have the tools and the machinery to break it down, to divide it the way you need to give 1 ounce to this person or a gram to that person, it doesn't make sense. And if you want to deal with exchanges where you just use it as a store of value and you cash it in or you trade it in for your fiat, I mean, right now the exchanges, if gold was $2,000, it would cost you, they would buy it from you for $1,800 and they would sell it back to you for $2,200. But the spot price is $2,000. So they're making potentially 10, 15, maybe 20% both ways in order for you to make a profit. If you actually wanted to trade it, it has to go up 40%. It's irrational. It doesn't make sense for the common man. Bitcoin has usurped the value proposition of what gold is for any regular person in the world. As long as you have an internet connection, you can essentially hold Bitcoin. And the internet is being adopted more and more so every day in third world countries. The internet is becoming more free to use every day by people who are the most oppressed. And that means that there's more access to Bitcoin to those people who essentially need it. Now, people in America will say, oh, yeah, you know, I mean, to most Americans, Bitcoin is still just a stock because they see it equal. They see it go up when Tesla goes up. They see it go down when Tesla goes down or Microsoft or Nvidia. But the catch is that Bitcoin is a savings vessel, not necessarily savings, you're saving your money, but saving your time, saving your energy, saving yourself from people who would, like you said, Adam, attack you. And Bitcoin has minimal attack vectors. And we have to remember that it's about defending your time and energy. It's not necessarily about getting gains. And the gains will, based on how they're dealing with the dollar and the euro and all the other fiats, the gains will take care of themselves. It's about you taking your self-sovereignty into consideration and use Bitcoin as a savings mechanism.
Yeah, I want to get Vance's take on this world going digital here. But first, can I add
one more thing to the, you know what?
Real quick,
about the spread being 18 to 2200. No, the bullion dealers are not making that money. They have to pay the mints that high price. So they're not making a profit off that. They're lucky to stay in business. Got it.
All right, yeah, I knew Andy has brought up. You sound like Andy there for a second, talking about all the wasteful money that's inside that whole gold thing over there. All right, but this, I want to read a quote from the guy who's in charge of the Trezor, because this hits on something that Ulrich said. They're introducing a new Trezor, okay? And despite the obvious wisdom of not your keys, not your crypto, just 2% of the 420 million. Global cryptocurrency users, just 2% of the 420 million global currency cryptocurrency users practice self-custody, while most use centralized exchanges and hot wallets. So guess what? 98% of the people are doing it wrong. And there isn't something, they're just, it's just like a stock to them. It's just like a bank account to them. And they really do not take to heart the be your own bank philosophy. And it's not good. And I who knows how true those numbers are. But you know what? From what I've seen, it's true. I mean, it's close to being true. 98% of the people out there, they're trading it and they just keep it there, or they don't know how to store it or whatever. And it's insanity. It's dangerous. And they're going to get hurt. That people are going to lose. There are plenty of people who lose it that way. But the thing is, when that happens, then the regulators come in and say, "Whoa, we want to get rid of, you know, make it illegal to self custody. We want to regulate these exchanges more." It's a vicious cycle that just leads more people to so-called safe exchanges, and they're not going to control their own private keys. So I just want to add that little stat up there.
Hey, real quick too, what I wanted to kind of piggyback on what Ulrich was saying is that this is a really important point about how you have gold or other things where you have government involvement. You have a top-down approach, which doesn't allow for prices for markets to efficiently allocate resources like they otherwise would, which is one reason why Bitcoin is so much more fashionable than things like gold and other things that are, you know, the dollar that's being controlled by the Federal Reserve and other central entities. It's another concern that I have that I'm hearing from people all across the country when I go and speak is about the problems with central bank digital currency, CBDC. Because when the government starts getting involved with this stuff, they're going to crush it just like they did the dollar. You know, this is another way where we don't want government to get involved with, because this will be an impediment for growth, for Bitcoin, for the future of our country and for the globe if government gets its dirty hands on what's happening with central bank with digital currencies like Bitcoin.
Well, they're gonna use the CBDC as a control mechanism over the
exactly
80% of the population. Yeah, but we're gonna have to deal with that when we deal with it. And they're gonna try to, and Bitcoin might get a bad name at first because they're gonna say, well, it's a digital currency too, and this other one's enslaving me. But I want to know, but Bitcoin, so that it will lead people to Bitcoin in the long run. But Vance, what do you think about digital over physical? Is it time to, because you talk all about taxes and lowering taxes and everything, but the things that can be taxed the easiest are stuff like real estate, because you can't just dump your real estate. You're stuck there. You're stuck in that house. So you're at the mercy of your local jurisdiction then. So, I mean, it makes people, I mean, I don't own any real estate anymore because it's too much of a pain in the butt. I don't know what fee they're going to give me next. I love this digital. I would only have digital assets, man. I think it is just the wave of the future. And Bitcoin, as everyone knows, is my main asset, to say the least. But what do you see? I mean, gold is an extreme physical asset. I mean, this is something from thousands of years ago. But what do you think about the world going digital and pros and cons? And do you see more and more people doing it?
Yeah, no, I think I've grown more in favor of it over time. I have some concern that the more we do go digital, does the government get involved and then they can take that digital assets away more quickly than if we have physical assets to come into your house and take it? I mean, they could, that's one concern that I have. But I think with blockchain and everything else, it'll make it's more difficult for them to go down that route like it once was. And so that's why people are looking at Bitcoin as the next step, the future of our country. And so while I do think that there are legitimate concerns, I think a lot of those are the same thing with physical assets and that are maybe even more so given what's going on. What I like about something like gold, for example, and Andy would know all about this too, right, is that it has productive value behind it. Like the dollar doesn't really have productive value behind it. It's just a fiat currency nowadays that's based on government debt. So there's not really a productive capacity that's underlying the dollar's value. Gold has that because you have to mine the gold. You have to have construction. You have to have labor. You have to have capital. All the stuff that goes into mining the gold, there are productive operations that are providing the gold. For Bitcoin, you have a similar thing where you have the electricity, you have the mining, you have the people, the labor, the capital. You have a lot of this that's going on. But I feel like looking more and more into this, right, Bitcoin is less able to be manipulated by government actions like gold can be. Gold can, the government can basically just take all the gold. They can also manipulate the price of gold by keeping supply and demand on the market as they wish, versus the market, free market sort of approach that Bitcoin provides over a physical asset like gold. So I do think that the digital currency is going to be more of the wave of the future. And people, even with their concerns, are going to need to get used to this sort of approach moving forward.
Okay. Remember, guys, all three of these dudes linked to below. You follow them on Twitter right now. All right. Before we get, Vance tells us about the Wall Street Journal article and Grover Norquist. Anyone else want to close out this topic? Any more to say? Well,
of course. I mean, Vance is throwing me, he's throwing me lobs. That's what I did for 15 years. I talked about gold manipulation. Obviously, the paper markets. Did you know, Vance, that the COT, the Commodities Exchange, where they trade the gold in New York, came online on January 1st, 1975, which was the day after gold was made legal to own. And it was there purposely to hold the price down, which they did with paper gold. And, you know, what you're saying, yes, it's true. It's the old view of, or what Peter Schiff would say today, well, gold has value because you can use it for stuff. That's nice, but you can't use it as money. It's not money. It was better money than seashells.
Yeah.
But, gold is to seashells, but Bitcoin is to gold. So it's just a commodity. And the sad thing for gold holders, aside from the millions of tons that are going to be sold by the people who are inheriting it for the next 50 years, is that gold and silver do essentially the same thing. They're right next to each other in the periodic table. So they're basically equal metals, except gold costs 80 times more, which means, guess what? Gold is going to come down dramatically in price to be much closer to silver, because in the future, it will just be an industrial metal.
Whoa, yeah, that's classic Andy Hoffman right now. Pound that freaking like button. And Andy, I do like how you bring up the inheritance. People don't, these, and that's why I'm saying it's a digital world. These kids, or they're not just kids, you know, 50-year-olds, 40-year-olds that get their parents' gold, they're dumping it. I mean,
they can't dump it fast enough for anything. For anything other than gold.
This is this leads to a bigger discussion. Maybe we'll have another show, but the trillions of dollars that's going to be passed on from one generation that saved pretty well to like this pot smoking generation that I don't know what they're all about. But that's for another show. Let us talk, because I mean there are some people that are, it's sad that are, they're pathetic people. They don't need jobs anymore because they're going to live off their parents' money and stuff in certain upper middle class enclaves. But hey, maybe that's what their parents wanted.
Well, not only that, they'll either live off their parents' money or they'll live off daddy government's money. So both the ultra elite and the middle and lower class are living in that same way where they're disregarding savings and storing up capital to make use of it in the future, so they can spend now, experiences, consumerism, the bad digital things, you know, living in the metaverse, whatnot. The catch is that when you're dealing with a money that is continually dying on a daily basis, the best time to spend it is now. So essentially, the fiat currency is incentivizing this type of behavior. And that's a bad thing for any sort of long-term civilization. But for the people who make that fiat money, it's a great thing because they get the better end of that trade.
Well, I don't think there's too many. The long-term thinkers are the ones who are dying, and the people that are getting their money are impulsive. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens if they're major gold dumps. I think there will be. But let's go to Vance and Wall Street Journal article. And Grover Norquist. So do you personally know Grover Norquist, or was it just did you? OK, so does he know about Bitcoin at all?
We haven't had a conversation about it, but I'll bring it up to him next time I talk with him. I talk to him pretty often. I'm a senior fellow at Americans for Tax Reform, and I've known Grover for about a decade. So we've been working together on a number of things.
Oh, wow. Explain who Grover Norquist is. He's been on 60 Minutes. He's been on everywhere before.
Yeah. Grover Norquist. So he's president of Americans for Tax Reform up in D.C. He helped to lead the Reagan Revolution back during the 1980s of cutting government spending. And then basically Reagan asked him, said, hey, you should start this organization, and they started ATR, I believe it was in 1985, and they have a taxpayers protection pledge where basically a lot of legislators, state legislators, congressmen and women, presidential candidates, presidents will sign their taxpayer pledge to basically say, look, we're not going to raise taxes. We can cut taxes, but we're not going to raise them. And they've had that now for, you know, nearly 40 years. And so he's been one of the key people to talk with, to keep people in line from a fiscally conservative viewpoint. And it's what he's one that I've really enjoyed knowing and learned from a lot in the process.
I think there's some critics out there of him who say, and I don't know if this is true or not, and you could, you know, talk, I mean, I know it's not true with you, that he talks about cutting taxes, that's his thing. But like, it's very important to cut the spending.
Yeah.
And he doesn't talk enough about that. I don't know if that's true or not, but I have heard critique about it. Maybe he's just, because it was such a revolutionary thing to, you know, get these people to sign this pledge.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't get him to sign a pledge to cut spending too. So I don't know if you want to say anything about that.
No, I think it's legit. That's a legitimate concern. Now, him personally, I think he wants to cut the spending and everything else. But publicly, it was more of a conversation about taxes and making sure we don't raise taxes in the process. That was really what the concern was there, which is a nice leeway, if you want, to going into our Wall Street Journal article, because I've been talking to him for a number of years, and I've been working on spending restraints, spending limits with many states, and even at the federal level when I worked in the White House as the chief economist for the Office of Management and Budget. My big approach was, let's limit spending. Imagine that. And start running balanced budgets and everything else, which pretty much all states have a balanced budget amendment. And so they've got to rein in spending. How should you do that? And you do that through a fiscal rule, spending limit. You can use whatever metric you want. My preferred one is population growth plus inflation, because that way the government spending grows less than the economy. I don't want government to be growing the same rate of the economy. If the economy is growing faster, there's more jobs and everything else. Why do we need more government? You should be spending less on welfare. You should be spending less on things because at the margin, the productive dollars should be in the productive private sector, not in the unproductive government. And I think that's really important. And so what we did was is talking with, you know, Grover and others, Patrick Gleason's another great guy over there at America's Tax Reform. And I said, hey, what if we do this for every state, have a spending limit? And we came out with what's called the Sustainable Budget Project, which is in direct response kind of to your point, Adam, about how ATR was all about taxes. What do we do with the spending side? And now what we're creating is a threshold to say, don't spend more than this. So that way you can sustain your tax cuts and everything else. Because I agree that if you're going to cut taxes, you need to rein in spending at the same time. That's what Congress always gets, and presidents too, get in the problem of, is that they cut taxes and they don't restrain spending. And we run up massive deficits in the process. It's a spending problem, not a revenue problem. And so in the Wall Street Journal on October 3rd, we had this piece, the data proved government is spending too much. And we go through all this. I've been doing research on this for a number of years now. I break it all down in this piece. I put the piece in the YouTube chat so people can check that out as well. I also put a link to the Sustainable Budget Project, which outlines everything that we've been working on. And you can actually go to this link and click on your state. And when you click on that particular state, it shows you what's happening in that state for budget over the last decade compared to population plus inflation, how spending growth has been during different periods. And it shows a whole bunch of other information about facts and figures for each one of those states. So we're hoping that this is a one-stop shop for legislators, legislative staff, congressional people, and just the average American to go and check out what's happening in your state and why are places like Texas, Tennessee, Florida, why are they flourishing when places like California, New York, and Illinois are not? And it's pretty simple. They have less government spending, lower taxes, and less regulation. These are the types of things that hold you back, and it's why people are leaving those states. They're fleeing those big government blue states mostly, right? They're blue, all blue states there, to lower government or less government red states that are in the other ones. And you know, I don't think it needs to be a political thing. I think just looking at the public policy, I'm an academic, right? So I'm an economist and everything, and in section of more government spending and everything else. And by the way, I'm critical of Republicans too. I think the populist direction of Republicans of more government spending and everything else, it's also a catastrophe waiting to happen. And so we need more fiscal restraint, which I hope is what this project will help with.
That is, you know, you make a good point about the Republicans. That's Tucker Carlson's wing of the Republican Party. It is the populist wing where they are going to, you know, help keep these jobs in these small towns by the government spending in these towns, you know, giving these incentives to these failing companies to prop them up. And I read your Twitter feed all the time. You're telling the truth here. It is not political. It is academic. You attack the Republicans too, and some of the crazy stuff that they do, the spending. That's why it's a shame that, you know, it's not just about lowering the taxes. You've got to cut the spending also. You got to stop these ridiculous, because they didn't cut them. Now the Republicans are even trending. I mean,
we all know America is, as a nation, you know, on a national level, federal level, is an Atlas Shrugged situation. It's a one-party socialism that will never change. So what Vance is talking about is Austrian economics, but on a national basis, we're just going to blow ourselves up. But there will be Gulch areas. Of course, the number one way to join Gulch is to buy Bitcoin, and hopefully a state like Texas or Florida, who have pro-Bitcoin people, or Wyoming, may actually do that in the way that El Salvador is doing, to build up on the real currency of the future. But there are actual also some pockets of the country that do have surpluses and the ability to do them. I think Texas, because of all the oil and just very good policies in general, may be one of them. I don't know their finances, but I'm guessing they actually could balance their budget in dollars if they're smart and run the country well, and they promote Bitcoin mining and own it. They could be a big power. But I think most of the rest of the country is just going to collapse into an Atlas Shrugged heap. Like the Californias, New Yorks, and most of the rest. And it's just sad. And that's why you got to go to a Gulch. You could do it personally by owning Bitcoin, or you could go live in Texas.
Yeah.
That's, you know, like a smart thing for me.
Did y'all know that Texas has a gold bullion depository?
Yeah, unaudited, of course.
Yeah, unaudited. And there's also talk about a blockchain, a Bitcoin, something that you can pay property taxes with Bitcoin. There's that. which I think, you know, we talked about this before. I think we need to eliminate property taxes, by the way. But maybe there's other ways that you pay your sales taxes or something, other types of tax. Fortunately, we don't have an income tax in Texas. We never should. But Bitcoin could be a way to help to do some of that as well, along with the medium of exchange within the marketplace.
Well, I like your approach here, and Andy really has addressed your approach. You know, if we look at the whole nation, yeah, it's going, it's like a Rand novel. But our nation is special because of federalism. And you are taking it state by state. And so it's up to the individual to decide, you know what, California's terrible. You know, I like the weather in California. I could put up with this horribleness, you know, and maybe summer like this. Maybe someone could share that. But you're really doing it. You're calling each state out. So people can, and you made it clear. So just to make clear to all the listeners, what are your top five and your bottom five?
Yeah, so the top five that we have are Colorado, which has had the Taxpayer's Bill of Rights. Like they're a strict spending limit over time. You have Texas, you have Tennessee, you have Florida that's right up there, and North Carolina. Those are the five good states when you think about spending restraint overall, which you would normally think about. You know, the bottom five, as you might suspect, are going to be like California, Illinois, New York, Massachusetts is another one. And then number five, I mean, some of them you might think about that would be a good one has been Georgia. Georgia has a lot of excess spending over time. And so it's not just red or blue. It could be a mixture of those. And you do see more of the red near the top, like the better ones versus blue at the bottom. But there are some red and blue on the different ones that are there. So
that's why I moved to Colorado 17 years ago.
Yeah. You know, Colorado's a great place. My family, we go vacation there every once in a while to get out of the heat here in Texas during the summer. And it's just a great place. I like Colorado a lot, and they've done some good policy approaches over time. I'm concerned about the Proposition HH that's on the ballot coming up. That's supposed to be for property tax relief, but really it's a way to diminish the taxpayer's bill of rights, the spending limit, and not have those the rebate checks that are sent back. It's really a shell game. Property taxes keep going up, and they're going to reduce the benefits of the spending limit there. I think it should be voted down.
Well, yeah, they just raised our property taxes for the next year. They're very low here, but coming up next year, that's the biggest increase we've ever seen.
I heard about it.
Well, you know your states, man. You're all sudden.
He does.
I do some work with the Independence Institute, which is a free market think tank there in Colorado. And I had Ben Murray, who is the fiscal director for the Independence Institute. He's going to be on my Let People Prosper show on Monday. So that's a good plug there, I guess. But we talk about Proposition HH. We talk about Colorado and what's going on there. So don't miss that one.
And it's very important that you plug your show, because you are linked to below everything that you've talked about, like these articles. It's linked on your website, right?
Because
and also the Wall Street Journal piece, is there a copy of it on your website? Because some people can't
read
the Wall Street Journal. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so, if you go to my blog page, I've got it there.
I mean, it's vanskin.com, right? Yeah, correct. It's linked to below. This is that simple, but you can get everything that he's talked about there. But again, follow them all on Twitter. They're all linked to below. I want to move, and again, remember Vance to talk to Grover Norquist about Bitcoin. Yeah, please.
I will.
And you can report back, Nick. That would be cool. All right. So yeah, in motion here. So let's talk about in motion here. Ulrich, you were at the conference, the Pacific Bitcoin Conference, near where you are in Southern California, in the Los Angeles area. And it's put on by Swan. And Swan is headed up by Corey. And he is, you know, one of the most... He's a Bitcoin guy. It's Bitcoin. It's hardcore Bitcoin. You go to the Pacific Bitcoin Conference, it's more hardcore Bitcoin than the Bitcoin Magazine Conference. It just is. I know Andy, you're a fan of Swan and that their approach to things, and you, Corey, and you have interacted on the Twitter and everything. You guys' Twitters can be similar sometimes. You're very pro Bitcoin. And Corey does not take to altcoins well. And that's a similarity he shares with Andy. Now, was that vibe there in this time around in Santa Monica? The like Bitcoin only. How hardcore Bitcoin was it? And tell us some highlights from the event.
Yeah, I think the Swan Conference, you know, I'm going to be honest. It's very pro Bitcoin, but it's very pro, I would say, novice Bitcoin. And that's a good thing. You know, there's going to be more new Bitcoiners every year than there were before. I would say conferences like BitBlock Boom or the TAB conference cater to more veteran Bitcoiners. People who are into mining, people who are into the code. And those I have never been to in person. I've seen videos and tapes of, but I do want to get to those in the future. So Swan does a good job of onboarding new Bitcoiners, trying to establish the differences between Bitcoin and the things that claim to be like Bitcoin. It's a very good cultural scene, a lot of art, a small conference. I don't think if I were to say there's 1,500 people, it would be a high estimate. But the idea that you can walk around and see the same people multiple times during the weekend or during the 3-day event, it gives you the sense of like you're in like a big giant family house, and everyone's there for the same reason. Or a similar reason, and it feels good. And I had a post on Twitter, and I called the conference it's like a family reunion that you actually want to be at with the family members that you picked, and that's a good thing. I think after these types of events, you kind of have this letdown where you have to go back to the real world where people don't think the way you do, or people don't have the same vision for the future that you do. But I wouldn't exchange that event for anything in the world. It's a good place to be. Some of the highlights,
I'm going to talk about my own.
I won the 3-on-3 basketball competition.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Corey.
Corey didn't play. I would have beat him if he played. Of course. but I had a what's his name? Captain Youth, who's a Bitcoin rapper, and Alex, one of Corey's employees, a 6'8 guy. So I was able to, yeah, it makes sense. I had some good pictures up there. I think my picture with the basketball is on day one of Swan's recap on Twitter. So that was a nice thing. Other than that, I think for people who are being introduced to Bitcoin, talking about seeing the cultural aspect in the Swan Dome, where they have a lot of the plebs on stage talking about what they do on a daily basis on Twitter, very important. Seeing the macro people like Lynn Ald and Greg Foss talking on stage to sort of bridge the gap between what you're used to seeing and what that means for Bitcoin and what that means for how Bitcoin's role is in the world going forward. I think those things are very important. But just the fact that Corey is walking around, talking to people, shaking hands, the center of the reason why the conference is there. It's very different from the Bitcoin Magazine conference I've never seen David Bailey in person. And not to say that there's anything bad about, I'm not trying to talk bad about the Bitcoin Magazine dynamic, that he may be maybe too busy to be on the floor with people for whatever have you, but it's a very down to earth atmosphere at the Swan Conference, and it's a good experience to have if you've never been there before.
And you got to give Corey credit because he talks a big game on the web, but he's putting his body out there in person too. So I mean, he's living it. It's not just a gimmick. He's living it. And yet playing basketball at a Bitcoin event, it's totally Los Angeles. There's a California feel to it. I was there. I mean, that might not be everybody's thing either, a California feel, but there's definitely a California feel. I want to add, the novice thing didn't appeal to you too much. If you want something more than novice, unconfiscatable in Las Vegas, that's like the second weekend in December. It's, again, linked to it below. It's Tone Vase, the ultimate veteran. Puts it on every year at the D Hotel. I will be there if all goes well. It's a little bit more advanced. It's smaller, obviously. You said 1,500 people. That's pretty darn big for a year like an off year like this. That's very good.
That was a high estimate. Yeah, I've heard lower.
Mm-hmm. If there were 1,000, that's great too, man. That's good.
FYI, Adam, my 2 cents on these conferences. I think they all jumped the shark long ago. All these Bitcoin conferences, no one's learning anything, and you can only listen to the same 10 people say the same things all the time. But you know what will matter is once this ETF is approved and you have the Goldman Sachs Bitcoin conference in New York.
Oh,
every hedge fund manager in the planet goes and the price doubles in a week. That will be a big deal.
So, you know, and I do want to counter real quick before, not counter, but add on to what Andy said. That is true. You don't really learn much at these conferences. And like I said, that's not really what I would go there for. I go there because where I live in socialist dystopian California, I don't get a chance to talk to like-minded people like you guys on the in the digital area, in the Twitter space. So seeing those people shaking hands, giving hugs, that is worth more than any 10-minute spiel I have to hear with even Corey. I'm not watching Corey on stage. I don't care. When Corey gets down off the stage, we'll get a drink together. But in terms of I want to see Shane Hazel. I want to fist bump Dom Bay. You know, I want to play basketball against the Swan employees. That's
you are
where,
paying a lot for that though, especially if you're not if you're traveling to go.
I am around the corner, so it helps. He's in LA.
but Andy, real good point about one day there's gonna be a Goldman Sachs Bitcoin conference. I had never thought of that. Pound that like button for Andy bringing up that original thought. But I do want to add on to something that Ulrich said too, the value of networking. It's what you make of it. Because guess what, guys? I forgot to mention this. The only reason I know Ulrich is because I was there last year, and that's where I met him. And he's
got 1 year anniversary.
You've got to meet people through me. There's been some opportunities presented to you. Things have happened because we met. So there is a benefit to it, but no, I think
I've said this before many times. Look, I've had it, my career is over 30 years. I worked on Wall Street. I did a lot of stuff, but the person who's networking most helped my career by many multiples is Adam. It's not even close. I've had a lot of networking that didn't do squat for me, but Adam, the relationship with him has been very good.
This is so flattering, man. This is so flattering. Once you become my buddy, I can do all the, I can digitize everything, all the networking. And guess what? Most people, anyone could network now over to, that's why I encourage people to be on crypto Twitter, Bitcoin Twitter, because these guys, you send them a DM, you never, it can't hurt. It can't hurt at all, but most people don't do it. So the next best thing is, in person, if you make the most of just don't be a yenta at these conferences. Be a productive person and really meet people and try people. It's a growing industry. They need marketing people. They need all sorts of people. They need Vanskin type of people. They need everybody. All right. So don't say there's no opportunity out there, even during the down market. There is. You just got to meet the people out there. I got a very positive spin on life. What can I say? Real quick before the show ends. CPI report, Vance, you were just tweeting about that, weren't you? All right. Any thoughts on that? Because that's the news of the day.
So that just came out today. CPI inflation report, year over year, it's up 3.7%, which was the same as it was in August year over year. If you exclude food and energy, what they call the core, that's still up 4.2% year over year, which is about double what the Fed's average inflation target rate is of 2% is what they want it to be. So this is still highly elevated inflation that's going to continue for a while. And if you look at real weekly average weekly earnings, so you take average weekly earnings, take out inflation, it was down 0.2% year over year. It had went up for 3 months in a row after being declining for 2 years. And so now we're declining again. This is not a good situation. An average household is down $7,300 just since Biden came into office, meaning they can't buy as much as they could by $7,300 compared to January of 2021. And things don't look like they're going to get any better because the Federal Reserve's balance sheet is still double what it was before the pandemic. So before, February of 2020, and Congress keeps overspending. I mean, they've run up about $300 billion plus just in the deficit over the last couple of weeks couple of days. This is substantial. Just in the last year, the debt increased by $2 trillion. We're on pace to continue to have $2 trillion a year deficits. The Federal Reserve is now talking about lowering interest rates on the back end, which is what's called Operation Twist, where they buy some of those long-term treasury securities, and then they sell off some of the short ones. But why are they doing that? They're trying to help out with a deficit. Net interest payments on the debt are soon going to be $1 trillion a year, and that's with $2 trillion deficit. So basically, we're just rolling over debt with new debt. We're fiscally insolvent, which is one of the reasons why we're talking so much about Bitcoin and other things here on the show, which is a great conversation to have because our fiscal house is a mess. It's a wreck. It's on fire, and there's no one there that really seems to care, want to do more about it. Yes, the Federal Reserve will probably raise interest rates again in November at their next meeting up to 5.75%, which will be the highest in 20 plus years. But that's not really where inflation comes from. Inflation comes from the Fed's balance sheet, from high-powered money that Ludwig von Mises talked about, Milton Friedman talked about. These are the folks that we need to be listening to instead of these transitory inflationary pressures out. Even Paul Krugman, which I just tweeted about him a minute ago and put, you know, the laughing face emoji, said that inflation is one. Well, how did he get there? Well, he excluded shelter, he excluded food and energy, and he excluded used cars. So all the things that people are buying, he excludes those out, and surprise, surprise, there's no inflation. This is just a ridiculous way to think about it, and again, it goes back to the Keynesian sort of Marxist socialist sort of approach that many of these folks have that we've got to get away from because they are bankrupting our country in the process.
But again, it's already, we all know it's all over. Of course, inflation is way more than 4%. Everyone knows that. Yeah. And now there's nothing they can do because the bond market is overpowering the power of the Fed to keep it down. The Fed can't do Operation Twist. If the Fed actually announced that, we'd have an explosion of interest rates and inflation everywhere.
Yeah, because it crowds out the private sector.
Yeah, that $1 trillion of interest is going to be $2 trillion very quickly.
Yep.
And you know, and this is going to go right into the Bitcoin halving. So the next year or two are going to be crazy. And
hold your hats, guys.
Yeah. Well, what Vance just said, it was very powerful, very impassioned, very truthful and everything. And the mainstream media coverage of this is just the opposite. And everybody buys it. And so nobody, it's quite crazy the way they twist these inflation numbers. It has become happyflation, like I predicted. It's just normal. Be happy. Mm-hmm. It's not as bad as last year.
Adam, people are not happy. You talk to people that we see in real life, people are not happy right now.
No.
People are really struggling and they're about to struggle vastly more. There's no more happyflation. No one's listening to the government anymore. They're just trying to get by. And it's getting harder each day.
If that senile guy gets elected president again, I'll have to contest what you said. Because if it's as bad as you say, and I know people are suffering out there. You would think, the way this country used to work is when people were suffering economically, they voted out the first George Bush. If they elect this senile old dude, it's
and no one cares.
Really,
no one
cares lost
president anymore. Everyone's beyond that. It doesn't matter who's the president. Just like it doesn't matter what.
I agree. It doesn't matter.
No one cares if the Fed raises rates. No one cares if Biden is president. No one cares about anything. Everyone is struggling, and the government is out of control and can't take it back. We're going to have $2 trillion interest payments on federal debt within a year or two.
You said no one cares about anything. I agree. No one cares about anything, so we get away with this. That's my point.
And oil prices are going to soar given what's happened over the Middle East right now. And part of it, like I agree with you in general, I think that the president shouldn't matter much. And ultimately, I think that's what our founding fathers here wanted as well. But it's getting to a situation where it is mattering more. I mean, I think this Israeli Hamas situation is a direct result of the failures of the foreign policy of President Biden. You know, what's happened in Ukraine and Russia is a direct result of the bad policies out of the Biden administration. And maybe it would have happened anyway under Trump or whoever would have else to be president. But I really think that there is a reckoning that's happening globally because of the incompetence of the current administration.
You've got a point there, and it's going into bigger issues there. But again, the people don't see the complexities of all of this, the interconnections. You know, I don't know. We'll see how it turns out. I've got popcorn because I've got Bitcoin. I just watch it play out, man. All right, so let's conclude the show here as we've gone an hour. And people should watch the UK Bitcoin Master. He starts in a half hour, so go over there. But real quick, everybody with some final thoughts, anything they want to share about what they're doing personally, you know, just check anything that I left out, just anything, just closing remarks. Ulrich, we'll start with you.
Yeah, you know, it's very important to remember that, you know, as we fight against taxation, like Mr. Grover Norquist, and we fight against spending, like Vance speaks about, we have to remember that every person is no greater than their incentives. I believe the no coiner Charlie Munger said that. And so when we think about that, if people who are in power have access to something that can skew economics, that can skew the way the world moves, would they use that power? And the catch is yes. So no matter how little we get taxed overtly, we're always going to have that hidden inflation tax because someone is out there to push to spend the money printer. And that's why we need Bitcoin, because it essentially takes that power out of the hands of individuals that would have that power and would use it. No one's going to be elected into office and say, you know what? I don't want that power, except for maybe people like Javier Milei in Argentina. That's another topic. One thing I do want to share, and let me pull out my other exhibit, is that at these conferences, I like to make the Declaration of Monetary Independence, and I made this one that you can hang on your wall to kind of follow up what I did back there for Bitcoin Miami. I'm selling them. If you guys want one, send me a DM. We can talk about how to get it to you. It's a pretty nice product. Very good quality, same similar quality as the ones that you see at the conferences. But always a pleasure to hang out with you, Adam.
All right, pound that like button. And his declaration, read the whole thing. It is linked to below. I link to it every time because it was something that jumped out in my head when I first met him. He's like, this is my thing. And I'm like, this is a good idea. Yeah. All right, Vance, you closing remarks here.
Yeah, it's great to be with you all of you today. Thanks for the opportunity. Keep the good work that y'all are doing. And yeah, check out that budget project from ATR. I think that'd be a good one. Also check out my podcast, Let People Prosper Show, where you can find it on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get them. I also just post the whole video on x.com. So that way you can watch it there, because I know that really helps with their algorithms and everything. And so be sure to check those out. And vancegan.com is the website. But yeah, I think there's a lot for us to keep talking about. You know, I'm always, it's a pleasure to join this crew because there's always some good information. It's going to help me keep me thinking about new ideas and what to write about and everything else. So keep the good work.
You know, I think you've increased your Twitter output, it seems like, too. It's very quality. So people follow Dr. Vance Ginn over there on Twitter. And remember to say hi to Grover Norquist for us.
Yeah, we'll do. We'll do.
For the Bitcoiners, not just
right.
The Bitcoiners. For the Bitcoin. All right, Andy Hoffman, you get the final word.
Okay, look, the next year or so, look, the end game has arrived now that the bond vigilantes have come back. And there's we're at a point where nothing matters except saving yourself financially, because we're going to see massive inflation and hardship in the coming year or two, coinciding with the Bitcoin halving. So if you don't have Bitcoin, you're going to regret it. And if you do, you're going to be very happy. That's it. That's my final word.
These four-year cycles are quite amazing. How all these things happen at the same time, halvings and presidents and the world falling apart and mysterious viruses popping. It's just crazy how all this is. Yeah, but I'm a believer in the four-year cycle. 210,000 block theory. Okay, final word. Well, first of all, Andy brings up, Colorado. That's where Gulch was originally. And it is. I'm glad they still have some fiscal restraint there. It is becoming different than it was originally 20 years ago when you were there. Utah is the next Colorado. Pound that freaking like button. Really, in many ways, there are many similarities. It's much more conservative here. It is a beautiful place. It does not have the craziness of the megapolis that Denver has become, from Fort Collins all the way down to what's the side? I mean, that's why the state has become changed politically on a national, who they vote for, is because so many people have moved there. Well, here in Utah, not so many people have moved yet. There are plenty of Colorado license plates, plenty of California license plates. But I do want to point that out. Speaking of Ayn Rand, I retweeted one of her, a 1979 two-minute classic of hers on my Twitter feed. It's about a different topic. But amazingly, she was right about something beyond just economics. Her morality stand on a certain issue in 1979 sounds like something some people are saying today in 2023 after recent events. But speaking of Utah and real estate and everything, dude, I'm walking around picking free food off of trees earlier in September, you know, peaches, because, you know, Adam's not really a Bitcoin millionaire. He just lives off the street or whatever, but no one believes it. Who knows what he has? Who knows what Adam has? It looks like I'm a bum on the street. I'm picking peaches off of, literally off of trees growing on the street. And a guy comes up to me. He says, you know who you look like? I'm like Perry Farrell, lead singer of Jane's Addiction. He's like, no, you look like, you are the Bitcoin Meister. I'm like, oh, oh yeah, yes, I am the Bitcoin. Third time in my life that randomly, not at a Bitcoin conference, just on the street. It happened in Miami in 2021, Boise in 2022, Salt Lake City in 2023. This guy, Scott Allen, I linked to him below. He's a real estate guy. He loves Bitcoin. Scott sells Utah. I said I would mention him. He was also at the in the Salt Lake City Bitcoin meetup. So it is an honor to be recognized by three people in my entire life as a dude from YouTube. It is cool. And celebrity has been decentralized, and that is freaking awesome. And anyone can be a freaking celebrity now. It is so cool. No more of this Hollywood dominance. We need more and more people randomly recognized from their YouTube channels. It takes away from the influence of that centralized mainstream media Hollywood type of connection. So I tied a lot in there. But thank you a lot, guys. Pound that like button. I say it every week, but especially this week. Oh, my. Shabbat shalom. Everybody try to be peaceful this week. You know, we don't need more of this stuff. But thank you, everyone. See you later, all. Let us end this here. Thank you, people that are watching. Adam is trying to find the special button on this crazy thing to.